This is the Talon Marks Campus News Hour on WPMD On The Net, bringing you what's happening and who's happening on the campus of Cerritos College. Here are your hosts, Tito Benavides and Enrique Rivera.
Today is September 28th, 2011. Welcome to Talon Marks Campus News Hour on WPMD.org On The Net, bringing you news and information campus-wide. First-time students planning to attend Cerritos College will be required to take assessment testing prior to enrollment starting spring semester of 2012. Assessment testing will be available for students this spring semester to ensure students will have enough time to meet this requirement. Campus News Hour speaks to Interim Vice President of Academic Affairs, Marilyn Brock, on this issue. Arts Editor Lorena Wietrich reporting.
So I'm here to discuss the enrollment changes of being, you have to take your assessment testing before you're enrolled in 2012 in spring, right?
Yes.
Okay, and do you know why these changes are being made?
Well, there's pretty good research that indicates that students that have orientation, assessment, and counseling before they start their college career do better in adapting to college and figuring out how to get through college in the most expedient way. So we're looking at student success and hoping that it will get more students to get on the path to graduation.
Will it affect enrollment numbers is there a certain deadline they have to take their assessments by before they enroll? So do you think people will miss it and it'll affect the numbers of how many people enroll?
Well, that's why we're doing it in spring, because we have fewer brand new students in the spring. And we're going to have to wait and see. We hope that we've got the information out and available so that people will do it ahead of when their registration is scheduled. But that's an unknown at the moment.
How does it benefit from enrollment in incoming freshmen?
Well, the benefit will be that they can take the orientation online, so that will teach them a lot of things that they need to know about being a student here. And counseling will give them a chance to develop an ed plan so they know how to get from being a freshman to graduation. And then assessment, of course, gives us their reading, writing, and math scores so that they can be placed in the proper classes.
When they take their assessments, do you guys look for certain scores for priority enrollment or no?
They don't get priority enrollment. It simply tells them which classes they should register in to be successful. Like, for instance, you. You assessed in English 100, so you now are eligible to take English 100.
And is there any other information I should know about the enrollment?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Other than the fact that, we've just got too many students and not enough classes, but that's the state of California finance problem, not Cerritos College problem. We would put as many classes together as we possibly could if we had money to do that.
Because I went to assessment to ask, and then they sent me to counseling, and they're telling me that it was a state decision to do it. So are they going to do this in all community colleges?
Yes. Well, no, they're not. Are you talking about assessment, counseling, and orientation?
Well, just having the assessment test taken before enrolling.
Oh, well, they're working on, right now, the community colleges in California all have, some of them have similar, some of them have different assessment instruments. There is a movement statewide that all community colleges would have the same assessment instrument for English, math, and reading. And, for instance, we use AccuPlacer. It's a brand name assessment vehicle for English. We haven't converted to the math one yet, but I expect we will. I would imagine that statewide they'll probably go to the AccuPlacer products. Just like Nike is a shoe brand, AccuPlacer is a testing brand. And they do have reading and writing and math tests that you can take on the computer that will then assess students into what level classes they should be taking. So it's built on, if you place into English 100, for instance, then we expect that you'll be able to be successful because that's what your assessment score says that you're capable of doing.
Do you think when they take their assessment test, they take their assessment to like, okay, I have English 100, like I'm eligible for that, but there's not enough classes, so they have to wait and postpone to take that class? Do you think like their placement is affected because they're from that space in between, they're not like keeping up with their English skills?
I would hope that there's not that much drop off, and I would also hope that, between, you know, like for instance, you took the placement test for fall and you're expecting to enroll in the English class in the spring. I would hope that that would still be a valid placement for you in the English class.
So do we ever have to retake an assessment test?
You can if you want to. You don't have to. We only require that you take it once. If you wanted to take it again, you certainly could. If you thought that you had done something that would better your score, for instance, in math, because a lot of students have trouble in their beginning math placements. So maybe they went to a math workshop, maybe they studied up on their math, maybe they got some tutoring in math, then they might want to retake the math placement test to see if they could score into a higher level class.
Reports of on-campus bicycle thefts have increased since the start of the fall semester, and according to Cerritos College Chief of Police Richard Bukowski, students may not be able to do anything other than invest in better locks. Staff writer Robert Beaver reporting.
This is Steve Ibarra, and I'm majoring in professional chef.
Have you heard about all the bikes getting stolen here?
I haven't, actually.
Okay.
This is the first time hearing it.
And can you tell me a little bit about your commute to school as a cyclist?
Well, I come all the way from Pico Rivera. I just like look anywhere where there's a lot of bikes, you know, where it would be hard to take a bike or something.
Okay.
Like, so I keep my bike safe.
So is it a concern for you?
I'm usually always skeptical about places. Like, I'm really careful with my bike. Kind of want it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not really much of a concern, though.
Well, do you think your bike is safe here?
Not 100% safe, but like safer than any other place.
Do you think your bike will ever get stolen here?
Hopefully not. Maybe. I doubt it will.
So what can students do to, do their best to prevent from their bike getting stolen?
Maybe take off a wheel, tie it better, get some stronger locks like these, chain probably, something that's harder to break.
Do you know anybody who's got their bike stolen from here?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Zach Goderman, and my major is computer science.
Have you heard about the bike thefts that go on around here?
No.
You haven't?
I haven't.
Do you not know anybody?
Not really, no. I'm the only one out of the people that I know that bike here.
Do you think your bike is safe here?
Relatively safe.
What's the most a student can do to really protect their bike from being stolen?
Somewhat of a strong type of lock, or something that someone can't cut off like and go unnoticed while they're trying to cut it or something like that. And then make sure you thread the lock through all the parts of your bike so they can't just take off one individual part.
Do you ever think your bike will get stolen from school here?
No, I don't think it will, but anything can happen, you know.
My name is Adrian Arias. I'm not having a major yet.
And first off, are you aware of all the bike thefts that happen on campus?
No.
Well, do you ever fear that your bike, you go to class?
I seen the bike right there, missing the tire, so I got scared when I came.
Really?
Yeah, the one at the end, it's missing its tire, so I got scared to lock mine up right.
Is that the first time?
That's the first time
really?
I've seen that.
And when was that, today? Or?
Yeah, well, it's right there missing. It's at the end. Like, it's just missing its front tire.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you think students can do to protect themselves from bike theft?
They could lock it up better, lock the frame up, or have more locks to have nothing missing.
Where do you ride from?
From Whittier.
From Whittier? About how many miles did you say?
Like 5 or 6.
Gregory Cifuentes.
Are you aware of the bike thefts that go around campus? No? You don't know anybody who's ever been stolen from? Okay. Do you think your bike is safe here?
Yeah. I got my chain. The way I connect my bike is safe for me. So.
Okay.
Makes me feel safe.
Do you think your bike will ever get stolen?
No.
What can students do to do best to protect themselves?
To know how to protect oneself is to know how to protect one's things.
What makes you feel so confident?
Faith.
Timothy Castillo.
And your major?
Major nursing.
Are you aware of the bike thefts that go around campus?
Pretty aware that there's it's pretty common to have bike theft.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if this campus gets any bike thefts or anything like that. So yeah, I'm pretty aware that there should be probably a minimal amount, if anything.
Have any of your friends gotten their bikes stolen?
Uh, I haven't heard of any thefts per se, but I fear for my own bike sometimes. So
you do? How so?
Just because I pretty much really trust security on, say, bikes. Because, I mean, okay, cars get stolen here too, so why wouldn't the bikes be stolen? Because it's probably easier to steal one anyway.
Do you think there's anything maybe security can do here better?
Security-wise, maybe just security presence, like at the, like at where people park their bikes. But as far as security goes, thieves will probably bypass it some way or another.
What are the best things, you know, students can do to try to protect themselves?
Basically, I wouldn't bring an expensive bike to school. Purchase probably like a pretty thick lock, and preferably like something like a U-lock or something.
So how do you think you would feel if you come back from class and your bike is gone?
It'd definitely suck.
What about walking home?
Yeah, it'd be pretty terrible.
This week's Free Speech Zone asked the student body what they think of the repealing of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in the United States military, allowing gay servicemen and women to serve openly. Staff writer Ellen Sanchez reporting.
Daniel Shaper. My major is linguistics.
Can you tell me your thoughts on the Army's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
It's a great thing that they finally, like, repealed it. I mean, it's about time. Personally, you know, I believe it's like, does it really matter about your sexual orientation? People are making it such a big deal out of that crap. And it's like, finally, people could just, you know, enlist in the Army without feeling, you know, that they have to hide themselves from the world. Like, they can actually be themselves at last, you know?
Nancy Serrano.
What's your major?
Psychology.
What are your thoughts on the Army's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
Well, I think it's justifiable because, you know, nowadays everyone's, like, a lot more liberal about certain thoughts and stuff, and basically don't, you know, just like they're saying, don't ask, don't tell. You know, who you like and who, what you are shouldn't matter. If you have certain ideas that are going to benefit the, you know, different things, then just be who you are and just go ahead and give your thoughts, you know.
Priscilla Orona.
Major.
Psychology.
Can you give me your thoughts on the Army's don't ask, don't tell policy?
Personally, I would have to disagree with the policy, mainly because I don't think a person's personal preference as far as sexuality should really determine whether a person's going to, you know, die for you or not. You know, either way, they're going to go out there and fight, and they're going to want to protect their country just as much as any other individual who likes girls or who likes guys or whatever. It's the same thing. It shouldn't change, you know, whether they should be in the Army or not.
So then you're for it, right?
Definitely. I'm for it because, you know, like I said, you know, I think they have just as much right as we do, and, you know, that they're not any different. They're still going to fight for us, and I just think that it's awesome. And any other way, it's just discrimination, and I'm not for discrimination at all.
Javier Corrales.
And your major?
Computer science.
Can you tell me what your thoughts are on the Army's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
I think it was just a quick patch that they did when they used the Don't Ask, Don't Tell to cover up anything. I think now that they are actually allowing open gays to serve in the military, it's better because that way they don't have to hide who they are regardless of anything.
So you feel it was somewhat of discrimination?
Yes, I do feel it was discrimination.
My name is Zarib Laranzana. I'm taking biology and I'm majoring in biology and physics.
I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts or your opinion on the Army's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
They should have ended that policy a long time ago. Doesn't mean that if you're gay, it doesn't mean that you can't serve your country well. I've known a couple of gay people who are policemen or firemen, and they're some of the bravest people that I know. So I don't see why being gay will prevent you from serving your country. It's not like terrorists will run away. Like, you know that the stereotype they play that, oh, if you're gay, you can't fight because you're just going to run away. No, that's completely asinine. So I think it has been a long time. They should have done it a long time ago.
Chris Jones.
And your major?
Music production, engineering.
So Chris, can you tell me your thoughts on the Army's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
You're referring to the one about gays in the military? It's a way to avoid the situation, I guess, but, I don't know, it's just kind of like, I don't know, it feels like it should be more addressed, I suppose. In my opinion, it's one way to look at it, just because you don't have to deal with it on site, but if you're looking for an extensive fix to the problem, it's
demolitions,
not the way to go about
renovation,
it.
And construction of buildings will take place on campus from 2012 to 2016. According to the Cerritos College Facilities Master Plan, which could be approved as early as November, Campus News Hour speaks to Cerritos College President Superintendent Linda Lacey for more details on the project. Multimedia editor Jim Brennan reporting.
The new facilities master plan, which was unveiled yesterday, does this master plan need to be officially approved by the
Yes.
Board of Trustees?
This was the first time that the board had heard the plans. Let me tell you, take you back the process. We have a facilities master plan committee, and it's a pretty large committee, and it has faculty, classified staff, administrators, students that serve on that committee. You know, that so it's been vetted through that committee for about a year now. They gave their stamp of approval. So the next step was during the study session to let the board see it. Now, it will go to an open campus meeting in October, which I don't think the date has been exactly set yet, but anybody would be welcome to attend that. We're encouraging people to come and see that. And then it would come back to the board for formal adoption in November, and then that would go into place. But I'm very excited about it. I think it's a great plan, and I really see us moving forward with some good projects. So I'm very pleased, and the way we've structured it, we're saving ourselves a lot of additional expense. We actually got a building out of this by being smarter. The building that you heard that was going to be CIS and mathematics wasn't in the original plans, because we were spending a lot of money on what you call swing space, that type of thing. So in other words, you can't close a building down without having a place to put, as an example, fine arts. And so you do all this swing space, and you have to put portables in or modify other buildings. Well, by doing some things, just moving some buildings around chronologically and looking at some things, we were able to really be smarter with this and get another building out of it. So I'm very excited about it. And it gets fine arts moved into a nicer facility way before they ever thought they could.
One thing that was interesting that I've never heard of before for a college campus, even a community college campus, the Gateway Building. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes, we call it, you know, when you drive up to a college campus, first-time students, never been on the campus, you don't want students or parents to wander around. The gateway is like your front door to your home. You know, what do you want it to look like? You want it to be welcoming. You want it to be accessible. This, you want it to be a one stop. In other words, a brand new student walks on campus and you can find everything you need to do. You need admissions. You need counseling. You need financial aid. In your bookstore, you know, you have all those services right there. And it's that gateway, literally, to the college. Think of it in a broader sense, college versus campus. But that's what we're talking about, that real welcoming center for all first-time students, well, and even other students. You know, you want that one-stop feeling where you don't have to run all over campus to get your services. But that's kind of what they talk about, something that you really drive around and say, oh, that's Cerritos College, and that's where I need to park to get started.
What role does Tilt and Coil play in this entire process?
They are our project managers for the bond program. So with the $82 million left, they organize, monitor, oversee all of these projects for us.
Utilizing older buildings as swing space, you mentioned, is going to save a lot of money. Would you like to elaborate a little bit more about that and how, as you mentioned a bit earlier, that it does help get a new building in there? Are there any other factors in which it does actually help furthermore?
Unfortunately, the old physical science building, it's an old, tired building, but we are doing some nice things inside of it. It's more attractive and more conducive for student and learning in there. We're going to be redoing all the paint, carpet, tile, sprucing it up, getting the electrical system up to speed and that type of thing. Because what's going to happen is that everybody in the business building is going to be moved, and they'll have to sit in that home for a bit. You've got business and CIS. Well, the CIS is going to the technology just for a brief period of time, and then all the business will be in that physical science building. Because if you looked at that master plan, that last building that we needed for business and administration, all those, that was another bond series. So in other words, that has not gone to the voters. It's out there a bit. So for a few years, we've got to make sure we've got a conducive learning environment for all the students and staff and faculty that have to live in that physical science building. So we are going to spruce it up, make it a better learning environment. And But what I was talking about with the Fine Arts Building, originally the plans had that they were going to close down half the building and move, have to have swing space, maybe bring in portables for the other half. In my mind, you can't have construction going literally in half a building, half not. It's just too, it's invasive, it's too loud, it's too disruptive. And so by us moving the site over a bit, we could keep the entire Fine Arts Building operating until the new building was complete. And then you just move out of it and demo it. One of the things, you know, it's always on the back burner. We're always thinking budget, 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 but we need to focus on all the things that we're doing right and doing well. And we have a lot of those. And I applaud the faculty for all their efforts in student success and the staff that are making this possible. And, of course, you know, the administration that's helping along the way. But the faculty are really doing unbelievable things to contribute above and beyond their classroom to student success. And I've been very pleased with what I'm seeing. I mean, I get list after list of faculty that are participating in these different task force and ideas, and it's exciting to me.
For this week's Campus News Hour Perspective, here's magazine editor Berlin Romero.
UC Berkeley students, Republicans, sold bake sale goods to mock diversity efforts, while psychology clubs from Cerritos College held one yesterday morning with no diversity prices. UC Berkeley Republican students were going to sell cupcakes, $2 for whites, $1.50 for Asian, $1 for Latinos, and 75 cents for African Americans, 25 cents for Native Americans, 25 cent discount for women. But our own psychology club used it for trips and other costly expenses. What's the reason behind it? Republican students sell goods based on race and gender, a very controversial topic, I'd say. Don't get me wrong, I don't mind paying 75 cents, but why be so racial about it? Rebecca Ademo, freshman at UC Berkeley, poli-sci major, told me about her effects of the protests that happened yesterday. She shared how she felt and the mock rally. They were mocking the bill SB 185, diminishing minorities by using a bake sale to make it controversial. SB 185 authorized UCs and Cal State universities to consider race, gender, ethnicity, national origin, which is also followed by the 14th Amendment, which government deprived a person's life and liberty, which leads to the Dred Scott versus Stanford. Come on, Dred Scott won this years ago, 1857. So why do we have to go through the same things and the struggles once again? If we fought for this once, why are we having Republicans still come over here and sell baked goods for like our racial ethnicity or our genders? This is something that is very controversial and it still affects many of us. And there was a protest that was held from 12 to 1 in their campus at UC Berkeley.
Feel the beat.
It's what's happening, who's happening at Cerritos College, and why.
Feel the beat with Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
It's what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're watching and listening to.
Feel the beat with Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
It's your school, your town, your world, your life. Read about it in the Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
Feel the beat with Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
The Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com. The beat of Cerritos College. Talon Marks students, you can crush a man with journalism. William Randolph Hearst. Along with the growing interest that Cerritos College students express in theater comes the desire to grow beyond campus productions. Urban Theater Movement has once again been the company to fulfill these needs. Assistant News Editor Patrick Dolly reporting.
Chanel Moore.
What's your major?
Theater Arts. It says music major on my transcripts, but I'm really a theater arts major.
What is the company that you're with?
Urban Theater Movement.
Okay. And what's Urban Theater Movement about?
Urban Theater Movement, it was pretty much founded here at Cerritos College. Two Cerritos College, former Cerritos College students, Brenda Banda and Paul Tully, got together and pretty much grouped a lot of Cerritos College theater students, and we did a show, and our first show in Long Beach. It's basically just a young company just doing new and urban type plays and just pretty much putting it all over.
Do you ever do original productions?
We did. We actually have our own playwright by Israel Lopez. He kind of relocated to Texas, But he did a play. He did one original play called Broke, a play for your broke ass that we did. Kind of like a fundraiser play that we did in Long Beach at Urban Theater, formerly known as Berubians in Long Beach. He did that play, and he also is working on a play that we're thinking about doing in the next spring. It's called Life and Death in Southgate Park.
And what is that about?
It's about a young man. He commits suicide, and everyone in this family that knew him, they kind of tell their stories, and they're dealing with their own personal problems. But they kind of tell their stories and their backgrounds about how his suicide kind of affected them. And, yeah, it's kind of surrounded around that one character.
How many productions does UTM put on in one calendar year?
In one calendar year? Oh. I know for a fact we have 4 main stage productions. There's just a long list that I can't even count. As far as we have an improv group called the Ivy League, and they put on improv shows frequently. We also have a spoken word poetry slam series called Spit. We have we did 4 of those, probably 2 a year, if not more. So it's a long list of productions we do a year.
You said the poetry slam is called Spit. Where did the name come from?
I have absolutely no idea. It might have came from the very first director that we had, Amory. I just know that Amory, I want to say Tao, and Brenda Banda, they pretty much got the idea and worked with it and kind of presented it to us, and we thought it was a really good idea. It was very successful. The very first one we did was extremely successful. It was in Bixby Knowles, and since then we've done them frequently. We have like about 4. I think we try to do it like either probably twice a year.
Are these things specifically tailored to minorities? Could a Caucasian come and audition?
No. For example, we have a play called Short Eyes right now, and it's predominantly about prisoners, predominantly of Black and Hispanic prisoners, but there's also the white prisoners, of course. So, of course, any race of people can participate in our plays.
What sets UTM aside from the other companies that are out there?
Just like what we stand for. We do plays that is out of the norm. I think plays that people out here are afraid to do. Raunchy type of real gritty plays, and it's unlike anything I've seen. You know, as far as I'm used to seeing the Shakespeare and the very nice and friendly plays. Well, Shakespeare isn't like nice and friendly; it's really tragic. But just the plays that we're used to seeing in high school auditoriums or assemblies, or pretty much even at Cerritos College, like the really toned down type of plays, and that's what we kind of stay away from. We kind of stay true to our communities, basically. Cerritos, Los Angeles, just the urban type communities.
Besides that of looking for urban individuals or even accepting individuals of other ethnicities, what specifically would you say that UTM is looking for from actors?
Being themselves, honesty. Just kind of stepping away from what you're used to seeing and what you're used to performing. Just step away from that and get a real general sense of what people actually need to see more so than what they want to. And I think that's the kind of plays that we do present, plays that people generally like stay away from, think that that's the dirty side or the vulgar side of theater.
What experience level is required to be a part of UTM?
No experience required at all. None whatsoever. If you have a love for theater, if you have a love for art, you're more than welcome to join us. You have a passion, a dedication, and a goal. That fire and hunger is all we're looking for in members.
Mixing and matching what students wear on a daily basis is about who they are more than what they wear. Campus NewsHour poses the question, is fashion and style an insight to students' daily moods and overall personalities? Staff writer Robert Olmos reporting.
My name is Jasmine Smith, and my major is nursing.
So tell me, Jasmine, what does fashion mean to you?
Fashion represents a person as a whole, so basically what you're wearing reflects who you are as a person.
Do you believe your clothing reflects your mood?
Yeah, depending on where you're going, it could say what type of mood you're in, how you're basically, the look like you're going for, or how you're feeling for that day.
Have you always dressed like this, or have you changed your style over the years?
It's different. Like, you can have, like, your girly days, tomboy days. I used to be a tomboy, so now I'm more into, like, the girly stage, heels, wedges, purses, stuff like that.
What made you change?
Just, I guess, your peers. When you're in high school, you start to look at other people and what they're wearing, and then from there you start picking out, like, what's your style and what you like to wear.
Do you feel it's important for you to dress a certain way?
Yes and no. It is, because stuff that you wear just tell who you are as a person. So, like, today, if you were to see me, you didn't know me, but, like, oh, well, she's maybe an athlete because she's dressed really laid back. If I'm dressed up girly with heels and stuff and, like, a nice shirt, you'd be like, oh, well, she's a girly girl, like, you know, she doesn't like to get dirty.
Do you dress the same way in school as when you go out?
No.
Fernando Cadena in business.
No, what does fashion mean to you?
Having fun, that's it.
Have you always dressed like this, or have you changed your styles over the years?
Well, I've always just dressed like what I just pick my clothes randomly in the morning. So I've always dressed like this.
Do you get your inspiration from anywhere? Your style from anywhere?
Music. Nah, not from MTV. I always got my inspiration from, like, music and, like, basically that's it.
What kind of music?
I like a lot of 90s rap, some new age rap, Nirvana, classic grunge.
What would you describe your style as?
As me?
Do you think the way you dress affects your learning environment at all?
Not really. I just come normal, so I don't think, as long as I pay attention in class, I think I'll be good.
Do you feel it's important for you to dress a certain way?
Well, yeah, because you should always dress to impress, like, because you never know who you're going to meet that day, so might as well.
Do you dress the same way when you're in school and when you're out of school, like when you go out?
Oh, I try to dress a little better when I go out.
Maya Ohayon, and I'm a theater arts major.
So, Maya, what does fashion mean to you?
Fashion is self-expression. I don't really say for myself if I have a particular style. There's just certain things that I like, and certain things that I think look good. But I think it's really just each person's own way of expressing themselves non-verbally.
What inspires you to express the way you do?
Just how I've grown up, and I had a hard time, and I was bullied, and so it's easy to express myself through clothes and fashion, and that way I don't really have to explain myself all the time to people. It kind of just comes out.
How would you describe your style?
I think I would describe my style kind of as relaxed. I don't really have, like, a particular, like, hipster or punk or whatever, but because I kind of change it up. One day I could wear a t-shirt and jeans or sweats, and the other day I could wear dresses and be all fancy. I like being relaxed, but then I like getting dressed up.
Do you think the way you dress affects your learning environment?
I don't really think so. I don't really think that it correlates that much.
Does your clothing choice reflect your mood at all?
Yeah, it does. Like, I'm kind of in a happy mood today, so I wore yellow. I mean, it does, definitely. If I'm feeling sad or kind of upset, I'll wear more black. And if I'm feeling happy, I'll wear brighter colors.
Have you always dressed the same way, or has it changed over the years? And if so, why?
It's definitely changed. When I was little, I mean, you know, my mom dressed me when I was little, yeah. So I wore the cute little outfits, and I wore a lot of pink. I don't wear a lot of pink now. I've just kind of grown up, and I've grown out of the quote little girl, you know, clothes, and just kind of grown into my own person, and my personality has just changed a lot, so my clothes have kind of changed with that.
Carlos Diaz, history major.
So Carlos, what does fashion mean to you?
Feeling good, looking good.
Do you dress the same way in school as when you go out?
No.
How's it differently?
Depends, colors, you know, bright colors in the day, darker colors at night.
Does your clothing ever reflect your mood?
No.
So what inspires you to dress the way you do?
I don't think I have one. I'm sorry.
Have you always dressed the same way? Or?
No. High school was completely different. So.
How so?
Less jackets, more t-shirts, less v-necks.
Why would you say it's changed?
I don't know. Just one day I realized that what I wore, I didn't feel like it was me, you know? I didn't feel like bands was me, you know? Just a lot of things. I didn't feel like it was me, and I was still wearing them.
Do you think the way you dress affects your learning environment?
Personally, no, but I know other people are more concerned about looking better than actually trying to be there for school, you know, other than trying to get attention.
Why would you say they feel that way?
Because I've actually talked to a couple of people about that, you know. They've mentioned that at Club Cerritos, you know. So, you know, they just... It feels like sometimes a lot of people just come just to look good, not to actually
start. So do you feel there's pressure on them to look good?
Yeah, I think so too, especially on the women. I think so.
How about the guys?
Not so much, actually. I think it's less on guys, you know.
Amanda Gomez, and my major is cosmetology and business management.
So Amanda, what's fashion mean to you?
It means everything. It gives you your personality, what you look like, you know? If you have no style, you're just bland. People don't even look at you.
Do you ever feel pressure to dress a certain way?
No, I think I have like my own style.
How would you describe it?
I don't know. It's just anything that catches my attention in the store, I have to have it. I'll take it. I don't like anything trendy.
So have you always dressed like this, or has it changed over the years?
Yeah. Like, I've had pink hair since I was a freshman in high school.
Do you think the way you dress affects your learning environment at all?
No.
Does your clothing ever reflect your mood?
Yeah, because, like, it's like when you go out to party, you want to dress, like, more fun, you know? Or if you're going to school, you're not going to go dress, like, in a skirt and stuff. You're just going to go dress, like, more.
So how do you dress out of school compared to in school?
Out of school? Well, this is my uniform. I have to dress like this. But outside of school, I don't know. I guess I kind of have, like, the same style. I don't wear, like, all black and stuff.
Do you feel cosmetology has inspired you in any way or changed your style at all?
Well, I went into cosmetology because that was, like, how my style was. I was always into hair. I always wanted to, I like crazy hair and stuff. So I kind of, like, just went into it, and I was already, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it hasn't, like, influenced me to, like, change my hairstyle or anything, or any type of style. It's just, if anything, like, it just helps you put your outfits together better because you learn about color, like the color wheel and stuff like that, you know? So, but other than that, like, I think my style has still been the same. It didn't, like, influence me or anything.
Fernando Campos, that's my name, Fernando Campos. And right now I don't have nothing. I'm just going to school. I'm decided right now.
So what does fashion mean to you, Fernando?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know. Everybody got their own ways of dressing, you know? I mean, I've been dressing like this, like, since long time, man, long time, you know, so I don't know, it's just the way I dress, you know?
How would you describe your style? Can you?
I don't know, man, I just dress old school, man, mostly, like, I would say, like, the style from the 90s.
What inspired you to dress like that? Where do you get your inspiration from?
Music, like rap music, stuff
like
that.
What kind of artists?
Like Eazy, Tupac, stuff like that.
Would you say you model yourself after them in your clothing?
Nah, I just listen to the music, man, but I don't really think that. I mean, I don't know. It's just the way I dress, you know? I mean, because where I grew up, everybody dresses like this, you know? So that's just...
So you say your the environment group in it inspired you to dress the way you did?
Yeah. It's mostly like environment where I grew up, you know?
Do you feel it's important for you to dress a certain way?
Nah, I think everybody should dress like however they want, you know? That's just what I think. You know?
Do you dress the same way in school as when you go out of school?
Yeah, same way, man. You know?
Same way.
Example, like when I go to parties and stuff, I dress a little more like casual and stuff, you know?
Yeah, like for instance, examples.
Damn, I mean, I would say more like we're like, you know, like dressing kind of when you go to clubs and stuff like that. That's, you know, like, but over here in school and out there, you know, pretty much is the same, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Excitement with visions of strength and discipline for the new Taekwondo classes offered here at Cerritos College. Fifth degree black belt Vicmar Cali Flores speaks with Campus NewsHour on how everybody at Cerritos College can shape up with his martial art. Staff writer Enrique Rivera reporting.
My name is Vicmar Cali Flores, and I'm an adjunct faculty here at Cerritos College teaching Taekwondo in the Physical Education Department.
Can you tell me about the Taekwondo program here?
Okay, the Taekwondo program here that I'm teaching at Cerritos College is actually the first of its kind, and it's taking the traditional Taekwondo training that I've learned under my master, Master Chan Young Kim of the Oriental Muro School, and basically focusing on the World Taekwondo Federation type of system, going over basics, punches, blocks, kicks, and stances.
Can you just give us a little bit about your background, like some important facts?
Okay, I have a master's degree in physical education. I have my master's degree in kinesiology. I'm also a certified strength conditioning coach. And my rank in Taekwondo, I'm a fifth degree black belt, and I've been studying for 30 years.
Okay, will there be any kinds of presentations you guys will have for the school to present?
Yes, we are actually planning on doing a demonstration at the end of the semester for the faculty department of physical education. But we're also open to possibly doing a demonstration for the campus sometime soon. So,
okay, What do you expect out of your students?
Basically, the only thing I really expect for them is just to come in here and be passionate. I don't expect perfection with their technique. I want them to be the best because every student is different. I just want them to try to get as much from this as they possibly can. And if they want to continue their training and further their knowledge, they're welcome to do so. So I just want them to learn everything that I've learned from my master.
Okay, your goals and your time here with the Taekwondo program?
My goal is to grow this program. This is actually the first Taekwondo program ever at a community college in this area. The only other Taekwondo program that exists is at a program in San Diego, MiraCosta College. So to be able to take this Taekwondo program and develop it as a curriculum and spread it to all the other community colleges and make it something that's provided at the community college level that's also transferable to the four-year university. So I will stay here as long as they permit me.
For students interested in the class, what would you say to them to get prepared?
The best thing I can recommend for students starting a martial arts program is, as far as general conditioning, flexibility. They don't necessarily have any pre-existing experience in the martial arts. Just be willing to do calisthenics, do running, basically anything. Anyone that has a limitation, I will work around that. But as far as anything else, I just want them to be ready. I mean, it's going to be very hard work, arduous, and very challenging, but also very rewarding if you allow yourself to be open to that. So, rewarding in terms of personal goals, yes, for the students. One of the things that the students will be striving for every semester is the rank of the next belt. So in this case, they'll be striving for their yellow belt. But it's not just about the ranking. It's about personal enrichment. Will help develop their confidence, not only just in academia, but also in life, give them the confidence to protect themselves, be aware of their body, understand the importance of health and fitness, and learn something that's been around for thousands of years, a martial arts that's not always available to the community college because a lot of times it's offered to the public. But to be able to provide it here at a very reasonable cost, just like you were at an actual studio, is one of the things that they'll get. And everything that I teach them is exactly what's taught at the studio that I learned from.
Do you know anything about the future of the program, like for next semester, is about the yellow belt? And then,
as far as the future of the program, I spoke to the dean of the department, Janine Prindle. She said that we will continue with the Taekwondo program again. Based on the economy, they're going to hold back on doing the intermediate and advanced. But what I'd like to do is take the students that are with me now and then add them to the students that are enrolling for the next semester. This will give them an opportunity to be an example to the new students, and at the same time know that even though they're working with new students, they still have their responsibility as far as rank. So if they are yellow belts, their next rank is orange, and for the beginners, their next rank is yellow. So,
anything else you want to talk about the program?
Other than the fact, I'm very excited. I've been wanting to provide a martial arts program at the community college for a long time. I've worked at multiple colleges, currently work at multiple colleges, and Cerritos College is the one college that really embraced this opportunity. So to be able to share with them everything that I've learned, it's honoring my master, Master Chan Young Kim from Cerritos, and showing to them that everything that he showed me is now my opportunity to share it with the world, and starting off with the community college. So I'm looking forward to its future, and looking forward to watching these students learn everything that I've learned.
Jesse Graciano, criminal justice.
How's the class working for you so far?
It's really good. Teaches a lot of discipline, teaches you to be humble. It's very exciting, and I think it pushes you to really understand what you're capable of.
What do you want to achieve in this class more?
Well, just discipline and training, going to the military, so I thought this would be a good step towards learning good self-defense and learning how to discipline myself.
Marilyn Fernandez, and major's nursing.
What do you like about it?
I like that we learn the different techniques and you have to do it like precision, and I don't know, it's fun too.
What do you want to learn or achieve in the class more?
I want to learn to do the, what's it called? The second belt thing. It's all really difficult. Well, it looks hard, so I want to do that. That's my goal.
What do you think about the teacher?
He's really good. He tells us that we have to be humble, but he's, like, strict, too. Like, we have to do the whole outfit, and But he's really good at teaching everything, and if we don't get it, he could ask us. We could ask him, and he'll tell us how to do it, like, right.
Jaime Flores, radio, television, and film. I know it helps you go ahead and, aside from just physical fitness, you're going ahead and you're self-improving yourself. In this class, it's not about, oh, you're the slowest one. You're going ahead and getting the experience. One thing our instructor always says is, you know, you're already doing a big thing because you're putting yourself out there. You're going in front of the class, sure you may get something wrong, but the fact that you have the courage to attempt a certain new strategy, it's commendable. He's really there for you, even after class, if you need a question, you still are lost on a certain type of new move, he'll stick around and he'll put in the time to go ahead and make sure you get to it.
How would you recommend the class to other students?
Definitely. We're hoping that, since we're the very first class, part of our final would be to see whether we get to move up to the yellow belt. And it's crucial that if all goes well, if we can have an intermediate course the following semester. Otherwise, the yellow belts, where would they be? You know, they can't exactly be in the beginner's class with two separate curriculum going on.
So this is more of a developing thing that you're trying to have here.
Yes, so I really hope that there's an intermediate course.
Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, is a Mexican holiday and a national celebration that brings families together to honor the lives of their deceased loved ones and family members. Campus News Hour asks students if and how they celebrate the lives of deceased loved ones. Staff writer James Williams reporting.
Steve Ibarra.
And what is your major?
It's in culinary arts, professional chef.
How do you honor your ancestry on Day of the Dead?
Well, we don't really do anything. We just like kind of like make some food or something. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Jennifer Garcia.
And what is your major?
Well, my major was AJ, but now I'm undecided.
How do you celebrate your ancestry on Day of the Dead?
Well, we tend to go to the cemetery, and we leave, like, for example, their favorite food. And, like, for my uncle, it would be In-N-Out, so we would take, like, a double-double and fries and a shake. Or sometimes we leave, like, bread and stuff. That's how we honor the Day of the Dead.
Daniel Gutierrez. What is your major?
Nursing.
Okay, and how do you celebrate your ancestry on the Day of the Dead?
I kind of don't believe in that, or I don't believe in celebrating the ancestry of the Day of the Dead. Why? It's, I guess, in my belief in my religion. I just don't believe in celebrating the dead. Don't really know what else to say.
My name is Tanya Torres.
And what is your major?
And my major is history with a minor in women's studies.
And how do you celebrate your ancestors and your ancestry on the Day of the Dead?
On the Day of the Dead, I try to participate as best as possible in order to commemorate those who have come before us today. Pretty much, we have traditions to build altars. You know, they're just artistic expressions, creations of our individual, you know, perceptions of the past, in a sense. And there are some traditional objects that we do usually place on the altars. There are sometimes, you know, Day of the Dead flowers or called La Flor de los Muertos, and it's also known as Cempasúchil. And those are very beautiful. They're bright yellow, you know, almost as hot as the sun, it could be said, you know. We also put pictures of whoever it is that we want to honor through our altar, to our whatever particular altar that we're going to be constructing. And then from there on forth, usually, you know, it's open to whatever inspirational you know, past that we're in for that day, during that particular year, you know, to just go ahead and share with those that are to here today, and of course, you know, to commemorate our history and our ancestors.
Priority enrollment benefits some students here at Cerritos College, leaving the remainder students with questions for eligibility. Staff writer Lucia Sarabia reporting.
Give me your first and last name and your position here on campus.
Sure. It's Dr. Steven Johnson, Vice President of Student Services.
Tell me about priority enrollment.
Priority enrollment is a system pretty much every college where by one means or another, students get priority for enrollment in a certain order. So you'll see in the policy that the college has that we have certain groups of students that have priority enrollment. That would be provisions under state regulations for students with disabilities and other selected populations. And then other students are in priority order primarily based on the number of units that they've accumulated at the college.
Who gets priority enrollment and why?
Priority enrollment has to do with, again, for selected groups that get priority enrollment, it has to do with, for instance, the issues with students with disabilities, again, under the state regulations. For other groups, it might have to do with the fact that they're required to carry a certain unit load or something of that nature. Other students, it is a process of students who are brand new to the college, mm-hmm. who come in and they complete assessment in the three areas, orientation and counseling. Also get priority enrollment, but only for the first semester.
Oh, I see.
And they get it that first semester now under what we refer to as our Early Success Program, or ESP. So ESP, if you complete, for instance, ESP by October 11th, then, and you're brand new to college, mm-hmm. then if you complete it by October 11th, when you enroll in November and December for classes starting in January, you'll have earlier priority enrollment. Mm-hmm. So after that, all students move to the system of the number of units that you've accumulated.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Will anything change next semester?
Well, we don't know yet because there are discussions and they are happening both at the state level and at the local level having to do with enrollment priorities. And when you say next semester, if you mean for spring, it's hard to see major changes happening that fast
mm-hmm.
Because enrollment will start for that in November,
mm-hmm.
So a major change is unlikely. But discussions are continuing, so again at the state level, and they'll probably happen at campus levels up and down the state, including here. There'll be discussions about what we're doing with enrollment priorities, especially in the environment of the state budget, and having limited resources to provide all the services and classes that we'd like to.
And why is it important to have priority enrollment?
Well, priority enrollment becomes important at least for a couple reasons. One is that you have, you know, upwards of 25,000 students in a college, but even, you know, if they're 10,000, they're 35,000. In some way, you're going to have a system to allow people to enroll in a certain order because mm-hmm. no system can manage that all at one time. So right. there is going to be a process for that. After that, given the fact that you have to have a process, then you start looking at what can we do to best support student success. So that and student success, you know, we define in terms of getting good grades, continuing from one semester to the next, mm-hmm. Finishing a goal like a certificate or a degree or transfer. So making progress through basic skills and developmental education classes. So all those measures of student success, we want our policies and our practices to support that because we're a student's own good. Mm-hmm. So as we look at what effect different policies and procedures have, we need to analyze them for how they best support student success. And that's what's happening, up and down the state in terms of people considering a number of policies and procedures that might affect student success.
My name is Ernesto Jose, and I'm a student here in Cerritos College, and I'm taking physical therapy.
Why do you think it's important for veterans to have priority enrollment?
Well, actually, it's been positive since I started here in Cerritos because that the priority enrollment for veterans really helps me a lot because at least I don't need to scuttle, especially I'm a family man, and I need to divide all my time with my kids, my wife, and right. school. So having a priority enrollment can actually help a lot as far as time and scheduling on my part.
Right.
So I don't need to actually rush to or put my myself in a position that I need to, you know, involve in, like, oh, I need to do this, like in an emergency or something. Right. I don't like to do that. I want everything that in schedule. So at least when they said, okay, this is the time for you to enroll, yeah, you need to be there. So it really, really helps a lot.
It really helps. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know if there's a certain amount of time that you have to serve in order to get priority enrollment?
Well, I think the chapter 33 is actually, the maximum is like 36 months.
Oh, really?
Okay, you need to be active. I mean, active service, 2001. Like, that is the reason why they call it like post 9/11. So you need to accumulated 36 month period to qualify.
Oh, I see.
And then if you get that one last, a lot of my friends actually only get like 24 or 18 months. I get a full benefit, so it really helps a lot.
Has there been any major changes in enrollment for veterans?
Well, honestly, yeah, you're right. Because when I started here, I only see like few people. Now, exactly, I see different faces, and I guess I can say because of the economy, and they want to. Well, they actually encourage us to actually use the GI Bill, because especially, like I told you, our economy is. You need to have some like changes as far as your priority, mm-hmm. where the job is. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why before I went to school and get a. This program, I need to do a lot of research. What's one? Because right now, even though you have some skills in the military, you are not 100% sure that you can actually get a job in that field. Because like I told you, you need to be open-minded as far as what you want to do. And having some like a research, because you need to do some research and go to like a veteran's place like this in school or whether in a city or something, that can help a lot. For veterans that actually served the post 9/11.
This has been the sixth installment of Talent Marks Campus News Hour here on WPMD.org on the net. We thank you for listening and would like to remind you to pick up the printed edition of Talent Marks at news racks located throughout the campus. We would also like to invite you to log on to talentmarks.com. for the latest in breaking news here at Cerritos College. On behalf of the Talent Marks News staff, I'm Tito Benavides. Have a great day, Falcons.